The Israel Connection is proudly sponsored by the United Israel Appeal. You are listening to the Israel Connection on JA Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia, coming to you live on 88 FM and on the JAIR website. My name is David Schulberg, bringing you this weekly radio program that provides analysis and insight with important interviews and discussion about Israel. In the show today, I speak with AJAC Research Associate Dr. Ran Porat, who explains that there is ample evidence to substantiate that the six Palestinian NGOs banned by Israel are PFLP-affiliated. After that, you'll hear two shlichim from the local community in discussion about a couple of key events in Israeli modern history. First up is AJAC Research Associate Dr. Ran Porat, who explains why donor nations and Palestinian civil society are so outraged at Gantz's order declaring six leading Palestinian NGOs in the West Bank as terrorist organizations. Welcome, Ran Porat, to the Israel Connection. It's good to have you back on the show, Ran.
It's great to be here, David. Thank you for inviting me for a discussion, a quick discussion.
Always good to talk to you. Ran, you have written for AJAC that there is ample evidence to affirm that the six banned Palestinian NGOs are PFLP affiliated. That is, they have connections to terror. So why is Palestinian civil society so outraged at this order from Gantz that declared the six civil society Palestinian organizations in the West Bank as terrorist organizations?
There are several reasons why they are outraged. The first reason is that reality is more complex than just black and white. Even in these cases, these organizations and many others are not one-dimensional. They have several what we call arms or different activities, types of activities. So one type of activity is what the Palestinians project out into the world and how they get their funding. And we'll talk about the funding in a minute, is that sort of the human rights aspect is where they support families in need. They try to develop agricultural economic sectors. They act as legal advocates for people they consider as disenfranchised or whatever. So that aspect is the sort of the open aspect. And that's what they said to the donors. The underlying aspect of many of these organizations, I have to tell you, these six ones are just part of a larger phenomenon, is their work with what we see as terrorist organizations or resistance groups or whatever, armed groups, certain officials, sometimes the actual leadership group of these organizations, they act as channel money channeling routes, money laundering. They work to disseminate more of the propaganda that is supportive of BDS. They boycott the divest sanctions against Israel. They support terrorists. They held them as heroes. So these are so one aspect of that, the anger, is the focusing on the public sort of positive activities while ignoring the other side. Other side of the anger is that these organizations, as I said, they are honey trap for many donors, especially from Europe. The list of funders for these groups there's barely a country in Europe that didn't give them money. And we're talking about sometimes millions. This is money going into the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian economy. And you have to remember that the Palestinian economy is very heavily dependent on donations and outside support. So without that, they're scared for their income. And at the same time, many of these organizations, as the PA itself, is corrupt to the root. So everybody, every dollar goes in, that goes in every euro, at some station along the way, somebody takes their cut. The actual people that should, at least, let's say these NGOs participate in anything which is legitimate, they don't get the share that they should, because everybody's on along the way is taking chunks of it for their own pockets. So the anger is also stage anger. To tell the donors, listen, we are being robbed here. Your money is being taken away. Et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of to cover the corruption, to cover the support of terror. That's where the anger is coming from.
Well, I certainly would be angry if their financial supply is going to be stemmed, because that's going to damage the viability of these organisations to function. I want to mention that a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed an analyst, a research analyst from NGO Monitor.
Yes.
Jonah Schiffmiller. And yes. We spoke about the Mohammed El-Halabi case.
Mohammed El-Halabi, yeah.
And in that case, he remarked how these NGOs, they want to operate without constraints, because that really suits their agenda. So they can get out and do what they like without being scrutinized and exercising proper business practices. That's the way they want to operate.
They actually operate, in many cases, they operate without such transparency, because their documents, if they have documents, sometimes are falsified. They act without transparency, and the Palestinian Authority acts without transparency. So this is sort of a culture. Listen, I've been investigating the Palestinian, the donation to the Palestinian Authority for more than 20 years now. And I remember in the 90s, we were running around the territories, and the donors kept on saying to me, the donor countries, you know, the ambassadors, officials, the same thing. It's not so bad. You know, comparatively, it's not so bad. And that kind of impunity, that kind of attitude that, well, okay, so some of the money goes to waste. We can't, we accept it, is what the Palestinians have created, sort of that's the norm, the accepted norms. So the donors don't even think about it anymore. They just give the money and take it as for granted that some of the money will go away. And Israel is just drawing a line in the sand, saying this is where, let's put aside the corruption, the support of terror is just where they cross the line.
Now, we're both aware, I shared with you a webinar event that took place at the ungodly hour of 2 a.m. on Saturday morning our time, so we weren't going to stay up to watch it, but they provided a recording. And this showed a Zoom event, a webinar, which was run by the Middle East Institute, Foundation for Middle East Peace. These are a number of big player organizations that would appear: Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Democracy for the Arab World Now, the acronym DAWN, Century International, and the International Crisis Group. And they brought together members of representatives of each of these separate NGOs. Did you get a chance to have a look at that and see what was being expressed there?
No, I did not, because of some sort of issues. But all I'm saying is I did get a chance to look at other developments that were not reported in the Australian media. For instance, the Palestinian Authority set up a fund to help businesses last year to deal with the corona, etc., and regular Palestinians. Turns out that many of these funds were paid to people with very high incomes, which are connected to the mechanism. Another thing that wasn't reported, for instance, is that the RAM, the United Arab List, which is part of the Israeli government now, one of their affiliates is a member of one of those Palestinian NGOs, not one of the six, a different one. It's called 48 Support or something like that, Support 48. It turns out they're having meetings in Gaza, in Turkey, with Hamas officials, and they're channeling the same way funders' money, you know, donations' money, into Hamas. This is a structure that is being used to override any monitoring. That webinar that you described is another way to, and it's English, it was in English, the very last thing was in English, for good reason, to make sure that the donors get the message that, we're innocent, we're all good, we don't support terror, etc. But the evidence against them is so robust, and I'm just talking about open sources. I'm sure that behind the scenes or the security services have even much more solid evidence against them. So it's a no-brainer that they should be outlawed.
So what do you make, though, Ran, of the timing of Gantz's move to tackle this endemic issue at this point of time?
And that's another thing that wasn't reported in the Australian media. The timing, many of these arrests or announcements are coordinated with the Palestinian Authority. I'll explain myself. So Gantz met with Abu Mazen Mahmoud Abbas a couple of weeks ago, taking steps to embolden the Palestinian Authority to be a ruling body. We both know that's a problem, but at least he's doing something from his perspective. On Saturday, PA security forces actually arrested an official that was working for Adamir and the UPWC, two of the organizations that were banned, charged for PFLP terror ties. So the Palestinian Authority does not, sure, they issued publicly, they denounced, they said this is aggression by, you know, the occupation, the regular statements. But behind the scenes, I'm sure some of the information actually came from the Palestinian Authority. This is coordinated activity. The number one threat for the Palestinian Authority, for Abu Mazen's sort of autocracy, is PFLP and Hamas and PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the Iran-funded. He cares only about his power and his money. So he doesn't want any... All this talk about this is an attack about civil society is just fake, phony, and again, a show for the outside world.
So the timing, you think, is quite reasonable, that it had to happen sometime, so now is as good as any.
What is the question? The use of the word timing, I think, is always comfortable for people that want to criticize some move. No, the timing is wrong. What is a good timing? I mean, there's no good timing. The evidence is bold enough.
Bad news is bad news. It can never be a good time for it.
Right. And the claims from the US and the Europeans, and the Europeans that met with these organizations after they've been banned, they were banned, are just to save face, if you ask me. The Americans know, I guarantee they know, but they have to possibly participate in that same charade, at least the Americans. That, you should have told us well ahead. Sort of a slap on the hand just to make sure that Israel understands that U.S. is still sort of the boss in many respects, although it is not. With the Europeans, it's a deeper problem of denial, self-denial. And the money it's fine. These are not terrorist organizations because they are ashamed. Although some European authorities actually started investigating what's happened with these funds, and I'm sure they'll reach the right conclusions.
But even Australia joined the club, coming out to ask for accountability on this.
I wouldn't look at it from a negative point of view. I would say this is a call for Israel to push forward more information and to increase the cooperation on these organizations and others. So let's look at the positive side. It's not a slap on the hand. It's more a reaching out call. That's how I would see it.
Would you say, I heard this accusation that what Israel is doing now is retribution for the Palestinian Authority taking Israel to account in the International Criminal Court. Do you subscribe to this view?
Not in this case. I mean, there are politicians in the Israeli political system that would take that view, sort of tit for tat. Mm. Benny Gantz is not one of them. And he, as I said, he's supported with very robust evidence. So this is not one of the cases. As I said, it's coordinated in a sense with the Palestinian Authority, possibly. And Gantz is trying to assist the PA to survive. So no, that doesn't hold water, that argument.
All right. Now, this issue for people who are supportive of Israel is worrisome in the sense that the Israeli government makes this declaration. It doesn't come out with the evidence in one nice pile that can then be put in front of the media to satisfy them that this is really the case. So there's an opportunity for denial because Israel hasn't put out for everybody to see the substantive proof of these connections to terrorism that are manifest in these Palestinian NGOs. Doesn't that put Israel a bit on the back foot?
There is a problem. I mean, the PR war is different from the actual war. And I do agree with you, but maybe they should have done something differently PR-wise. But we also know that you can't convince the unconvinced. And in many cases, that's what Israelis say, shmum. UMS is a short for UN, right? We take into account that whatever Israel does, it will face scrutiny, criticism, and negativism. Even if you come up with 100% solid evidence, there will still be complaints and attacks. So I'm not saying you should have put forward something more substantial in English with the pictures that are, I only gave a few examples. There's so many examples that prove the ties, the strong ties between these organizations and the PFLP that is beyond any need to actually go into details. Just look at their website, you look at the story I published. So it could have been a PR, better PR, managed PR wise, but I think it's a bit irrelevant at this point. Israel will do what Israel needs to do.
Well, PR isn't Israel's strong point, diplomacy. I actually wrote to Jonathan Tobin, you know, who's a commentator from Commentary Magazine, and he replied to me overnight, and he said that in regard to this concern that I've just been discussing with you, he replied that, "I'm afraid there are a number of Israeli institutions, including the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, that are always more interested in the idea of diplomacy and outreach than they are in debunking the lies of the Palestinians, even when those lies are common knowledge." It seems like he seems to think that there are institutions in Israel that are just not playing hardball.
I tend to disagree, because reality is less black and white. I've been inside these systems, and I know it's more a nuanced game, and that whatever you do, you always face criticism, either way you go. So I tend to disagree with that opinion.
Right, okay. The other thing I heard, there was an I-24 interview with a security specialist. His name was Yerushalmi. I can't remember his first name. But he points out that in the same way as we know has gone on with the Mohammed El-Halabi case, that Israel can't disclose too much information because that reveals the way in which they go about gaining this information, which is putting them at risk going forward. So this is the same situation here with these six NGOs, that there's certain ways in which they retrieve this information, discover it, which they don't want to make apparent to these organizations, because then they'll find ways around it.
I agree. And let me just give you an example that maybe explains, because we think about informants and all sorts of electronic means or whatever, and collecting information, especially from the Palestinians in this case, is much more sophisticated nowadays. The Arabic word, actually, in the Palestinian Authority in Gaza for a cell phone, is Jawal. Jawal is the name of the company. It's like in Israel, you know, it's like you say Telstra. I'm calling for my Telstra, right? But they said I'm calling for my Jawal. And it turns out that Jawal, at least in the past, the software that they got was not from, I would call it, neutral sources. That's all I can add. So Jawal is the only network currently in the Palestinian Authority and Gaza. And it uses a certain software, and that software came from all sorts of sources. So all I'm saying is that Israel has to make these decisions. At least in the Iranian case, there was a lot of criticism of exposing the archive, the nuclear archive that Israel took from Tehran in January 2018. The decision makers have to make these considerations, take into consideration exposure versus, you know, security. There's never a simple answer.
I want to also mention to you that a few months ago, I did a debate between the Deputy Mayor of Jerusalem, Fleur Hassan Nahum,
yes,
and the Fatah representative, Sameer Sinishlawi, who's the chairman of the Jerusalem Development Fund, who also happens to be very willing to come onto this show to speak, interestingly enough. The other night, I happened to come across an interview with Sinishlawi on I-24 TV News. And I'll play this little excerpt for everybody to hear.
I think this is a political decision. It's not security. You can link any organization, you can link any person, any Palestinian to terror if you want. But the question is whether these organizations were really behind some terror organizations or not. I think definitely they are not.
In this, we hear that he indicates that Israel, by associating the operations of six important Palestinian civil society NGOs with terrorism, doesn't enhance its security in any way. And what he says, which is interesting, is that you can link any person, any Palestinian, to terror if you want. This is what Sinish Lawi said. So he's saying the connections to terrorism are potentially everywhere in Palestinian society, which, of course, between the two of us, is a very serious reason for concern. But he's kind of dismissing it, saying, well, Palestinian terrorism can be found everywhere in Palestinian society, so why are we harping on these particular examples?
There is a kernel of truth to what he's saying, but it's not the whole truth. I mean, there is a doctor that works in an Israeli hospital, and he might have a cousin that was engaged in some sort of connection to terrorism. You have to understand, as I said in the beginning, these groups, even the terrorist groups, have multiple activities, and some of these activities are considered legitimate civil society activities, support for the needy, social work, whatever, schools. So yes, you can if you want to connect, but I don't think Israeli authorities are knee-jerk acting, a knee-jerk reaction against anyone, just trying to trigger happy arresting anybody they want. In many cases, not in all cases, these are people who actually directly engage in terror. Directing terror, funding terror, participating in terror, and I'm not talking about stealing a bread from a grocery shop. These are armed attacks, and it is commonplace in the Palestinian society that many people are engaged in violence, in armed violence. It's a problem. It is a problem. But it doesn't justify or doesn't say that Israel is just looking for everybody to arrest. No, there are real reasons that people are being arrested. It's not fake news.
Yeah, well, a lot of people believe that there's some fundamental issues with Palestinian Arab society, that there are violent undercurrents. And I've been speaking in the past few weeks about Israeli Arab society. And as we both know, the violence in Israeli society is actually more prevalent amongst Arabs than it is between Arabs and Jews.
A complicated and sensitive and complex issue. That can be covered in a minute, but it's a cultural issue, it's economic issue, it's historical issues, it's societal issues, it's ethnic, it's many, many, many different aspects. It's not a simple...
Yes, yeah, I wasn't going to try and take you there at this point of time. We'll be off the track. I just want to get you to perhaps tell us what you believe, Ran, is going to be the outcome of all this wrangling that's been going on. How is it going to pan out, do you think? What's going to be the result?
If you're talking specifically about the NGO, so it's going... Yes. Well, I can only guess that the sort of...
got your crystal ball there?
Not today. It's sort of broken. The Israeli historical term was mowing the lawn. You cut them and they grow again. But you have to keep on cutting the grass. So most likely they will reform in different names under different shapes, different shapes. The PFLP, Hamas, and others still need funding, and they'll find ways to get those funds. So it's Barak said that we have to fight terror as if there's no peace, and we have to fight for peace as if there's no terror. It's an ongoing issue, and possibly take generations. So don't wait by the phone for some sort of major development that everybody's sitting under their fig tree and there's peace. It's still going to take generations, unfortunately, from my perspective.
But Israel's not going to back down with what it's decided to do by banning these NGOs. They're going to stick with that, you would suggest?
I would definitely see that Israel will not back down. There's no reason to back down. Just a bit of criticism. If Israel would have backed down for every criticism they faced, then Israel would have done nothing and just lay down and wait for everybody to step over. That's not going to happen.
Is there going to be a statement coming out of the U.S. Acknowledging what Israel has discovered?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think there is a necessity for that. What is more important is the ongoing direct ties, cooperation on an operational and diplomatic level. All the rest is just, dressing on a sort of play that everybody's an actor in. You know, all the world is a stage.
Well, we've been on that stage today together. Ran, I really thank you for your insights into this latest development with the Palestinian NGOs.
Thank you, David, for inviting me to talk about this.
Thanks very much for talking to us.